And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is Nerder, She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Welcome to the Athletic Podcast Network. You're listening to the Athletic NBA Show, and it's Wednesday, so it means it is Nerder,
She Wrote. Dave Dufour is not here. He just decided he's taking a vacation. So he's left it for me, Mo DeKeel, to be your host, Seth Partnow, who's always with us. And we brought in our colleague, Mike Vorkunov, to join us. And Seth's already shaking his head. Seth, I didn't even get far enough.
No,
I'm the way you did in Vegas. Don't shake your head like that.
I'm shaking my head at Dave because if he misses any more pods, by league rules, he's not going to be eligible for postseason awards. So,
damn, misses one, and Seth is already.
I don't make the rules. I don't make the rules. Those are the rules. And if it's going to cost Tyrese Halliburton, $40 million, it's going to cost Dave a shiny plaque.
Okay. Well, before we get into things like those rule changes, we want to know from you guys. You listen to us. Now we want to hear from you. We're asking you to fill out a quick survey about you and your podcast habits by going to theathletic.com/survey24. And I'm telling you right now, three lucky entries will win $100 worth of Amazon vouchers. Seth will actually pay for all those vouchers. Seth will send you those vouchers. I'm kidding, Seth. Relax. So whether you're a longtime listener, new to the show, go help us out. We're trying to help you. So give us some of your podcast habits so we can try to find some smart ways to help you guys out. Theathletic.com/survey24. Again, theathletic.com/survey24 is the link. And just follow it from there. All right, guys. Now that the podcast business is out of the way, let's get to the fun stuff. Mike, how are we doing?
I'm great. I got scared. Seth was shaking his head at the mirror mention of my name. I was like, this is, I don't know what I'm stepping into. I find out it's just scoring for Dave, which is fine.
No, you don't understand. Like, I get so used to the head shake whenever I'm talking from Seth, basically on these podcasts, that it's almost just, I expect it. When it's not shaking, I'm actually more concerned because I'm like, okay, no, there's something wrong here. But since we had you today, we kind of wanted to talk about a few things that may not necessarily always be nerder topics, but along the lines of, you're kind of plugged into the NBA and the business side of things and everything. And Seth and I thought it'd be a good time to talk to you about the potential of a new TV deal.
Oh, fun. Yeah. And that kind of is doing a lot of work. Kind of plugged.
Kind of plugged in.
The media rights deal is just kind of hanging over everything in the league this season. We're like having so many things changed or stagnated or just waiting on decisions because the league is trying to get through the next TV deal to figure out basically how the league needs to work.
Kind of a minor detail.
I think this is important for, even though this is a little bit far removed from what we talk about, I think a lot of the things we do talk about, we have to acknowledge that as sort of the elephant in the room that, I made fun of the 65 game rules. The 65 game rules is something that was implemented with, like, specifically, I think, for the purposes of the TV deal. And so much of the, technology stuff around the league, like the move to pose tracking, for example, which is a topic that we can maybe get into, but is nerdy, but sorted, was, with an eye for more gizmos to be there in the media rights deal. So I think that we'd be foolish to not acknowledge the impact that those discussions have on the play on the floor.
Yeah. I mean, the, the 65 game rule. They're waiting on making tweaks to the in-season tournament until they hear what the what their next media partners want. You know, so much of this is about making the game more compatible for the media ecosystem and what the next potential partners might want and want to pay for. That it's kind of ideation and modernization in a way to fit the media landscape rather than to fit maybe where basketball is going as much.
Yeah, and it's just a weird time because so much is on streaming, and you know, it's are the tech companies, is Netflix, is Amazon, is Apple going to jump in, YouTube or whatnot? It's, you know, what's ESPN thinking, TNT, you know, is NBC kind of lurking? There's like just so many different potential characters involved in this whole negotiations that I'm the one thing I'm really worried about is this being broken off to too many places. Like I am what's worried too about many? Let me just say, I'm just very worried about becoming too old too quickly. I found that out recently on the soccer field that I'm quite old. But the, you know, like, what channel is this game on? Oh, it's not a channel anymore. What service do I need to go find this? This is the game I want. Oh, wait, but the other game's on this streaming service. Like, it's that is something that I worry a little bit about that I think is going to happen. And I think it's going to be problematic in all sports.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I think that's something the NBA has thought about. Like, one idea I'd heard about was that the NBA would almost make every game available, like, through its NBA app. And then have that as almost a funnel to whatever streaming service or whatever broadcast partner it has, and figure out the, you know, economics on the back end of that, how to distribute monies. But like, make sure that there's one place that people can go to watch the game, so you don't have to Google Knicks, Hawks, what channel is it on? Which I think is a real concern. I don't know if that's what they'll ultimately end up doing, right? I think probably they'll end up doing whatever they can get the most money for, right? This is business after all, not a nonprofit that they're running. But I think that making sure accessibility is top of mind is something that Adam Silver and the league has been thinking about. I think they want to make it games easier to find, not like on 15 different networks at one point throughout the season.
I mean, that makes kind of a bit of sense. What do you want to see though? And Seth, I also want you to jump in too. Like, what do you want to see out of the media deal?
I mean, the thing that's interesting about, you know, running everything through the NBA app is, I think it's been a sort of a long-standing issue with sort of the reliability of some of the League Pass streaming options have you know, I think the NBA has from a technical standpoint, at least from an end user perspective, has probably fallen behind the state of the art there. So that's okay. You want there to be a one centralized location. Does said centralized location actually work as intended? Is sort of the first thing that pops to mind there. But I guess if that's your whole show, then maybe that gets more focused than it's gotten, but then at the same time, how has it not gotten that focus to begin with, given that they're charging for a league pass and that is a source of revenue? So I don't want to say that I'm doomsaying. It's just that there's some areas of concern on my part, because sometimes the gap between intention and execution is, and that's not an NBA only thing. That's just any large sort of somewhat unwieldy entity like this. They're, you know, the left and right hands aren't always in perfect sync.
Yeah, and I mean, I will say, like, I don't know if this is going to happen or not, but, you know, I think it's just one idea that's been thought out there. The other part is they could be partnering with a tech company. And when you know, like, say, like Amazon, and if they do that, then you get a little bit of outside help to come in and make things run right. And they've had, from what I understand, I think they, they re-digitized the WNBA League Pass app, I think last year, if I remember correctly, and that's been going pretty well from what I understand. And so, like, you know, there's the capacity there to make things better. Obviously, League Pass has been a problem. It has barely worked for me this year, I think, which explains why I've watched less basketball than usual, just because I can't.
Thank you for saying that on a basketball podcast. I appreciate that, Mike.
Let me be honest with the listeners, okay? It's not my fault. I'm blaming someone else here. But it's gonna be very interesting. You know, I think they'll probably max out at 4 TV partners. Like we're talking about, like ESPN, Disney, Warner Brothers, Discovery, which is Turner, Amazon, or some kind of streaming only network. And I think maybe NBC has a chance to get in there as well. They're big on broadcast. They're big on making sure people can see games, and you want to do that on broadcast as people kind of keep unsubscribing and cord cutting. And so the big thing to me is like how many games are going to be on, you know, ESPN Plus or whatever their over the top apps going to be, and how many games are going to be on Max. And then you got the new joint venture coming in next year. It's like, this is going to be a very diffuse way to watch the NBA instead of just two networks that you've been able to rely on for so long.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So my question is how's it going? I know that there were, you know, when these negotiations, there were some sort of pie in the sky multiples of current deal being discussed, and there are certain things that have happened in the league that this year that seemed like they were like would help towards that. I think in like the success of the in-season tournament is that, but then more recently kind of the I think Adam Silver was very visibly peeved at the All-Star game, and that, you know, that being sort of a media tentpole maybe went sort of the other way in terms of increasing the perceived draw. So you tell me from what you're hearing, like how happy, like I guess, you know, bringing it back to stuff we tend to maybe talk about more, like obviously, you know, a new media rights deal affects the salary cap pretty directly. So are we, you know, where's that look like in 3 or 4 years?
Yeah. I don't think any team's going to be skipping Christmas presents or anything like that next year, 2 years from now. But I think, you know, there was a report a few years ago that the NBA was looking like 3 times its average annual value in media rights. I don't think they'll get that based on just like people that I've spoken to. I think it'll probably be closer to around 2 times that. And that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to double it right away in year one, right? This is an average of the full term of the deal. So maybe it'll be a little under 2 and it goes over the length of it. But I think that's kind of a reasonable expectation. The macro tailwinds have been kind of moving against them. You know, Warner Brothers Discovery is just trying to cut its debt and just trying to be as thrifty as possible. So I don't think they're in a place where they want to spend a lot of money, and they might get a smaller package. And Disney is going through its own stuff, and I don't know if they're in a place where they just throw money around as they might have been like 5 years ago. And, you know, someone like Amazon, even everyone expects these tech companies to come in and just splash the pot. But that hasn't been the case either. And so I if I had to predict, I would think it would be like 2 times what they're getting right now on an average basis. I think we still get 10% cap increases every year. I'm kind of hard pressed to see how we don't get 10%. Cap increases every year, because you're going to get, you know, the media revenue is going to go up to like roughly 40%, let's say, of annual revenue, somewhere around 35-40%. It's a big chunk. So it really matters a lot for the league, not to mention it's all out push to get money coming in from everywhere else around the world as we announce new Abu Dhabi games for next year.
So the league's not going to fold if it only gets double and not triple. Like, that's going to be the it's not going to fold. We're going to be okay.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they might have to like contract four teams, but otherwise, it'll
okay,
be fine.
Okay.
You lose
okay.
You lose a leg, but nothing.
Can I pick the teams? Can I pick the four teams?
So last question on this, and this is not this is maybe looking at reduction in game inventory, maybe in a slightly different way. Is it's always sort of seemed to me that the regional sport network model has been probably the biggest obstacle to messing with 82 games. I think that from a pure basketball standpoint, I don't think that there's any question that 82 games is too many. It's not good for the players. It's way more than you need from a standpoint of like determining who should be in the playoffs and which seeds. We basically, I mean, it's from that standpoint, I've done the study. It's 20 games too long. I guess my question is in this new environment, are the RSNs sort of deprioritized? Does that possibly lead to at least having the discussion of, hey, maybe 72 is better, maybe 60 is better, or is that still just a third rail that no one's going to touch?
You know, what's funny is I remember Adam Silver saying this about, I think 2 years ago, saying like, yeah, we'd consider 72 if it, you know, if the media partners wanted that. So I don't think that would necessarily be a huge third rail if there's the financial support for it. I don't know I don't think the financial support there is there for them. They just signed a new CBA, which kind of locks in the length of the season, right? So you'd have to go back there. But again, if the money's good, like everyone can kind of change their minds pretty quickly and sign a side letter and make it happen. But I don't know. I think the tonnage, the sheer amount of games is still pretty valuable, especially if you're trying to sell it, you know, to a streaming company. And I think, yes, RSNs are probably going to, you know, falter or keep faltering, rather.
Not probably.
Yes. They're going to keep faltering. That you're going to keep faltering. But we've already seen, like, you know, Amazon try to come in and buy up 15 teams worth of local TV rights, right? The league has continuously talked about or thought about trying to make its own, you know, local league pass. So I don't know what the incentive is there to go to 72 games in a way that doesn't, you know, cut down on how much revenue there is. Because it's not like the players want to give up revenue either, right? I'm sure they'll take playing 10 extra games to make sure that their money's right. So I don't know how you make that happen or if there's anyone who
they
got a palate for it.
They won't play those games. That's my point. Like, I think that's the bigger issue with that. I still think the money won't go down that much, and I think you make a lot more in the long run, but I'm hardly an economics expert. And we need to talk about basketball now, guys. Like, we talked about the media stuff. We all know I'm not smart enough to hang much longer in that conversation. But one thing we're hearing a lot about around the league is potential, like, there's an air of like rule changes or ways to kind of, I wouldn't say cut down scoring, maybe just kind of score a little less or make it a little harder to score. What are you hearing, Mike, around the offices? We should say you're in New York. You're like, I just assume you walk around the league offices, give Adam a high five in the morning when you see him, and kind of just that's how you get your information. So what are you hearing around that in terms of that sort of discussion?
Yeah, I stand outside of Olympic Tower with like a little cup and a hat, and I panhandle for scoops. I'm just hoping someone just throws it in there every once in a while.
Yeah, right. A scoop will make me smile type sign or something like that.
Yeah, I hold a sign. I coaches have been kind of back channeling and talking to the league for weeks now, even before the All-Star game weekend, let's say airing their grievances about how defense and being able to play defense has kind of gotten away from them. You know, I think there's a general, general understanding that the league will not tighten rules so much as to, you know, get games back where they were, let's say 10 years ago, 5 years ago, in terms of, you know, the ability to play defense, just the freedom of movement rules, all that stuff that makes it harder on offensive players. I think they just want some consistency, at least in terms of officiating. That's been a gripe that I've heard from head coaches, maybe something closer to the amount of physicality that's allowed in the postseason. Maybe getting away from the grifting foul calls, that players have just kind of professionalized so well this season and years past. So I think that's one big thing. Like, hey, can you just make games more, I don't want to say well officiated, but at least some consistency there, and just get rid of some of these fouls that are just clearly being taken advantage of by smart offensive players.
Yeah.
So
go ahead, Seth. Go ahead.
No. So it's been, a lot of has been made about this. I know Tom Haberstroh has written about this recently. Some other people have noted it is in the last, you know, month or so, there at least seems like there has been a change in how the game has been officiated. I ran some numbers on this, and in starting using February 1st as sort of an arbitrary cutoff point, there's been a slight decline in pace across the league. Less than half of a possession per 48 minutes per team. But at the same time, free throws are down almost 2.5 per team per game. So I mean, we're you know, 5 free throws fewer per game, and you know, you can look and see. Part of it is fouls on drives are down for the first couple months of the season through the end of January. According to NBA tracking data, there was a foul called on 7.5% of drives. Since then, it's been 6.5% of drives, and that's a small decrease. If you look at where fouls have been called on the floor, the place where it's down a little bit, sort of all over the floor, the biggest place where it's way down is if you look at, you know, foul calls versus shot attempts, is in the sort of the non-paint restricted area, kind of floater range. Picking up the dribble on it, like the zone where people are picking up dribble and making their move on a drive, or trying to get that run into the defender kind of grifty foul we all hate. That's way down. It's slightly down some other places. Oddly, it's way down in the corners also, but that's a small sample size and weird, and so I don't want to read anything to that. And there's a sort of a compounding effect in that because of these slightly fewer fouls called, it means there's actually been a pretty big reduction in non-shooting fouls in the bonus. So that's about 1.5 free throws fewer per game coming via bonus fouls. So all of which is to say, it does seem like something has changed a little bit in terms of what contact is and is not being allowed. First of all, Mo, have you noticed this? And second of all, Mike, have you heard any discussion of this?
No, I've definitely noticed it. Like, I feel like just watching the games that they're letting them play a little bit more in that stuff. I mean, the Celtics-Cavs game last night, there was a lot more contact. There was one play where George Niang was guarding Kristaps Porzingis and was all over him in the paint area. And be honest, even I was like, that might have been a foul. But they let it go, and they had allowed it to be a little bit more physical, a little bit more understanding that contact is going to happen. And I think that was one of those things. I've seen it across some of more of these games, and I'm actually, listen, free throws are the worst part of the NBA game. Boring. They're slow. It's they slow things down. It's you know, like what, 95% of them are not high pressure situations, maybe even higher than that. And it's, you know, I feel like you're in that situation where it's like you do want to cut these down in the foul calls and the flow of the game. You want it to kind of continue. I've been delighted by it in that sense.
Yeah, and I think this goes towards what the coaches kind of just have been complaining about and asking for too, is you want some sense of physicality. You want some sense of friction that the defense can cause, right? Maybe it goes overboard a little bit too much with like the George Niang situation that you talked about. But like, I'd rather the NBA skew to that end than to the other end. If it was me, I don't think you need to bring back 90s Knicks physicality, but some level of physicality I think is pretty good. And I think fans enjoy watching it too, like when you're talking about just kind of the aesthetic of the sport. As well. So we'll see. Again, this is just like kind of the consistency of all these things. It's like, will this be called consistently for the rest of the season, right? Or will we have, again, some kind of return to what had been the norm in November and December and January? I don't know. We'll see as we get into, you know, later stages of March.
One thing I want, and I want to completely get rid of. I'm done with the gather step. It's a travel. It's three steps. It's ridiculous. I watched Paul George do a Euro the other day, and I'm telling you, it was 3 to 4 steps in that sense. And you go, oh, it's a gather. And then no, the step back into shuffling your feet right afterwards. And then that should be a travel. Like, come on. Let's just toss the gather step. I don't even know when it really kind of came into existence.
I think it probably was a response to sort of, you know, when players like Giannis Antetokounmpo and other like the ball, like the, this is something that is probably an inevitability with the rise of sort of, you know, 6'8" and above ball handlers, just because when did they pick the ball up and then they took their 1-2 and sort of trying to figure out when that happened, because those steps are so long and the dribble is so high. I think I do agree with you that it's, I mean, I obviously agree with you that it's, you know,
stop the podcast. That's it. We're done. Yeah. That's it. That's like a new experience. Stop the podcast.
Oh, Mo, I agree with you so often. You just, yeah,
you do.
No,
you do.
But this is, but no, it's sort of like at it's one of those things where it's not just the like the grifty fouls that make defense hard. When a guy can change directions 3 times after he picks up his dribble while still running, like, how do you guard that? It's the same thing as how do you, you know, the thing we've been on about since we started the show was sort of the reverse pivot moving screen, where the defender has to go a full yard wider than the ball handler, and just, you know, make it a little bit harder to make it more skill is needed to create advantages. And I think that would be a big one. You know, we talked last week about like the Paolo Banchero, game winner, and of course, like the league coming out and say, well, actually, if you look at it, blah 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 blah, and rules lawyering the hell out of us, and it's just like, but it's a travel. Everyone who's played basketball, that's a travel, and you sort of risk fan rejection if the game on the NBA floor stops to resemble your, like, obviously it's a higher level and people can do things, but if it's like the rules are obviously different than basketball you've played, then you kind of risk rejection and giving fuel to the, I like the college game better because they care and play defense and blah, 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 which is, you know, we think it's wrong, but you certainly give that viewpoint ammo when you allow for, you know, those kind of things.
And I will say, like, my problem with the grip foul is not just the obvious, like, to me, stupidity of it. It's the fact that it is so hard to defend now, right? With all the freedom of motion rules that they have in place, movement rules that they have in place, with how strong and fast and skilled all the players are now, that even in those rare times when you can get pretty good position on someone, when you can get in front of someone as they go to the rim, then they have this kind of like deploy hatch they can jump into to still get a foul call. Like, that to me is why I hate it so much, is that it's another way to prevent good defense for something that nobody wants to see. Like, nobody wants to see an offensive player lean into contact to then create contact and then get a foul drawn on the defender. Like, that's not pretty. That's not good basketball. You do that at the park, like, people are going to, you know, get up in your face for it.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. But we also can, at the same time, I think, I actually don't know where Mike stands on this, but I'm also, if we can ban the charge while we're at it and make these guys also have to defend, would be nice too at the rim. Like, that would be a little bit.
Yeah, I don't like the charge. It's the same thing.
Right,
like,
okay,
I don't want to see it.
We're good.
Like, you know, I was worried when you went, I get the arguments for it.
You might be on the wrong side. You might be on the wrong side.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense at the speed of NBA. Like, it's a difficult rule to officiate, and also, like, sort of the attempts to police it have also almost made the problem worse. Like, the charge circle, instead of you know, players like undercutting at the basket, they now jump forward, and it's just like, you know, and you can say, well, it's great. Like, the argument is always, well, he did great. He got great into great position early enough. It's like, yes, but the rule that incentivizes standing on the ground underneath a 6'9" guy trying to elevate and dunk doesn't seem smart. But
yeah,
anyway,
what do you think of my idea? If we're trying to, like, help things out here, one, along with your ban the charge cause, mine is ban reviews of all kind. That's just because I hate reviews and I think they're stupid. And I don't care if the call is absolutely 100% correct. But my other thing is, what about adding a fourth official? not to over referee games, but just to make sure that these calls are made correctly, because it is so hard to referee NBA players nowadays because of their size and their speed and their skill level. And because the refs then also have to haul butt to get into position. I don't know if we can curse on here, to haul butt to make sure they're in the right position to make the call.
Mo,
yes, you can curse. I've done it many times and have had
and haul ass refs.
There you go. There you go. An ass isn't a curse. Come on, man. What are we doing here?
I mean, I think that also requires sort of a fundamental re-examination of the role of the referee and how the referees are sort of graded and assigned. Is that again? This is a soapbox that I've gotten many times. I blame Mark Cuban for demanding like this like supposed objective standard for referee correctness, and it's led to sort of letter of the law officiating, which, you know, when really they're there to manage and enable the game to have some flow, some entertainment, and some fairness, like balance those things against each other, and like the microscopic detail, whereas like, you know, is this given the flow of the game and how it's been played, that might not be a foul tonight, but tomorrow night where it's a much less physical game, it might be a foul, or that might be a technical tonight because the temperatures are high, but it's nothing tomorrow night. And it's just, you know, that's a completely different sort of you know, that sort of management of the game versus like almost the accountant version of the game where, well, no, she checked the box. He picked his dribble up there and then gathered. So technically everything is good. So it's a good play. And I would like to get from that and more. Yeah.
You want a WWF ref. You want someone just to keep things moving, make sure that this thing is entertaining.
And if a ref occasionally has to take a power bomb through a table, so be it.
A couple of owners would love to do that. Mike, you had me. I was ready to make you commissioner. I was ready to go until you added the fourth ref. We don't need a fourth ref. I'm sorry. And I'm sorry. If you can't run up and down the court, you shouldn't be a ref in that instance. But we don't need another whistle. I don't think – I think that will lead to over-reffing in the long run of things. Seth knows. I echo everything with Seth in terms of the game flow stuff. The reviews got to go. Because, again, just ruins the flow of the game and challenges and this and that. Hey, you're going to get screwed on calls. And we've seen teams get screwed on calls anyways, even after a review. So it's not really helping the situation.
Yeah.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
But I want to get away now from like, all right, let's get to the court. Let's get to the basketball. Because this is really what we're about here at Nerd or She Wrote. We're coming down the stretch. We got like, let's say about like what, 20, 25 games for each team. And I want to ask you guys, what scares you for each team? Not what scares you about that team, but like, if you're that team, what are you concerned about type of situation? Coming through the stretch. And we're going to start with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Seth, what scares you about the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Karl-Anthony Towns. Like you're talking about scaring for them as a playoff.
Yes,
team.
Yes, yes. If you are if you are a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, what should you be concerned about?
All right, it's that. Like that's the too big lineup is sort of just by where you've invested your salary cap dollars has to work for you to be playoff viable. And I don't think Vork, we haven't talked about this, but I know Mo and you and I have. We do not trust him. I believe he is one of probably the most profligate high volume drive guy in terms of turning the ball over. And we've seen it in the postseason where teams pressure him and he wants so hard badly to make a play that he runs himself into a charge or a bad pass or a wild shot. And I just, he's well deep enough into his career that this isn't like young guy problems anymore. It's just, we just don't trust him to make the right play consistently enough to be a valuable playoff performer.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think Karl Anthony Towns seems like one of the most nicest stars in the league, but he also seems to be the guy who wants to hit the most six pointers, who wants to do the most, as you said, at the right time. I get that. I think that's fair. And I think that kind of dovetails what scares me about them is their defense in crunch time. I know they lead the league and I think defensive rating, but it's 10 points higher in, quote unquote clutch time, whatever the NBA, denotes that as. And I think part of that has to do with just kind of the personnel that they have to run out there in those situations and playing two bigs at once.
I actually don't mind playing the two bigs at once. I think they've done a good job with figuring that stuff out. I really think I don't trust their maturity. It's not just Cat. I think Edwards has that in him. I think Rudy has that in him to a degree. I think that's why Mike Conley is so valuable for that team of just being the adult, and being now, guys. But it shows most in crunch time. And that's where you're really concerned. And that's the thing that kind of I'm worried about sort of holding this team back here a little bit. I mean, they lost a guy last year because he punched a wall at the end of the season. The maturity of this team makes a massive difference there. And I think that's sort of that calmness you need in crunch time where you're not so afraid and panicked in that sense. I think that's kind of what worries me for them.
Yes, I think that the difference you'd make between Cat and Edwards is that you're just worried about it with Cat. With Edwards, he can also say it's a growth opportunity because he's so early in his career that and pretty young that we've seen these things be a problem in the past, but you can at least have some reasonable somewhere between expectation and hope in terms of growth, because there's a normal learning curve in terms of how to, handle those situations well that we've seen some players, grow in those terms over the course of their career. So, and this is maybe a natural segue to talk about the Celtics, given that the way they lost last night, in it's a team that we've seen we've had the same concerns about them for, is it 5 years now in terms of their, are you getting the 90% Celtics who see you most of the time, or the 10% Celtics that frequently
what
give
changes with them?
Away?
No. I need what changes with them in the last 5 minutes of games where they are just for 40. Sorry, I'm doing math. 43 minutes playing great offense. The ball's flying. Da, 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 da. I'm telling you, it hits the 5 minute mark and it's like they all got to go hero ball time. Like, what changes in them?
It might be too pat, but it's like I almost want to say Mamba mentality takes over, and it's Jason, and it starts with Tatum, in that this is, I believe, I saw someone come up with this last night, that last night was the third time in the last 2 years where he has down one, shot clock off, run the clock down to try to get the last shot, and that is like, if it is a tie game, you want the ball in the air at zeros. If you are down, you want to go quickly, just in case you don't score, because you want to give yourself more chances to score. And it's sort of like I'm engineering this moment for myself rather than doing the best possible thing to win.
Yeah, but that's a loser mentality. You blow 100% of the leads that you never have. So, I mean, you just got to shoot and think you're going to make it.
I'm just messing with you.
You're killing me. Oh, my God. God.
Yeah. Yeah. but that's like we don't trust, like we don't trust the Celtics have been the best team in the league all year, but we don't trust them in the playoffs completely. Is that fair?
No. I'm completely with you.
I actually do. I'm just so afraid, and part of it is because I don't trust the East. The rest of the Eastern Conference, I'm just not, you know, as enamored with. You know, maybe a month ago or a month and a half ago, being like, oh, okay, there's actually some real challenges there. I'm not as worried about that for them. I think it's an issue for them in more the finals. Of course, also, if they play Miami, I'm picking Miami just because history. But I think I'm just shocked by it in that it spanned three coaches and we still have the same problem at the end of games with these things. And it's not every end of game. There are nights where even in crunch time, they do a good job of moving the ball and staying within their stuff. But there are just nights where it's all of a sudden it's one person decides it's my time to shine. And it's, you're just like, oh guys, I mean, that's the thing that scares me with them in that regard. So let's just stay in the East though. Cause another team that potentially can be the biggest threat to them, who's playing really well of late, is the Milwaukee Bucks. Mike, what scares you about what are you worried about if you're the Bucks?
You know, I think the easy answer would have been defense earlier on, but this guy, I get a daily email from this guy. I think his name is Steph Portnoy. And he says over the last 2 weeks, they've actually led the league in defensive rating, which is pretty impressive considering the depths they were at earlier in this year. I still have some qualms about their defense. I think the personnel still isn't great. And obviously I don't know if they get to the Eastern Conference Finals or the NBA Finals, they're the obvious Doc Rivers questions that have bothered him over the last decade or so of his career. So those things to me are still top of mind. And I've always thought they still need a dash more of like athleticism to be able to hang with some of the best teams in the league. And I don't think that's been fully rectified.
The thing about the Bucks is that they're with Doc Rivers is they're just much, so much more solid. I don't think they're going to be the best defense in the league over the rest of the season. But if you're starting your half-court defense with Brook Lopez and Giannis Antetokounmpo, you have a chance to compete on every possession, on every night. And just getting to the point where they are making teams play against that set defense, even if their point of attack defense is questionable, you know, with the backcourt of Dame Lillard and Malik Beasley, it's still much better off than, you know, allowing teams to play 5-on-4, 5-on-3 because someone's gambled on a steal in the backcourt or something like that. So just like filling the hole of the disorganization that was so much a part of the first 40 games or so of their season, you know, gives them much more of a chance. For me, the bigger concern is where is Chris Middleton, just not just a health, but what level can he be on now? The difference between, you know, when they won the title, he was a top 25-ish player in the league. He's probably closer to a top 50 player in the league now. Is that good enough to get through what could be a gauntlet, with a team that doesn't have a lot of dudes after you get past their top four?
Yeah, I mean, my actually big concern is perimeter defense and particularly wing defense. Because, like, just talking about Boston. All right, how are they matching up with Boston? Like, with Tatum and Brown, you know? And then on top of that, then you have Derek White running around and doing crazy stuff. You have Drew Holiday, you know, doing Drew Holiday things and every now and then taking a bad shot. But you got to let that go for all the other good stuff he does. And then, you know, it's just interesting. Like, I feel like I will be fascinated to watch that because that's the biggest concern for me is when they play teams with good wing players. And that's where I'm going to be watching them going like, man, I don't know how you're going to really be able to slow those guys down. And I think even just saying like Bucks fans love to say this, just throw Giannis on one of them. Giannis isn't that good on wing players. Like, I'm sorry. It's just not I think we kind of overestimate his powers. And I think that's one of those things where I watch him on the wing and I just don't see it. So that part's going to be really interesting in that regard. I want to move west because that's the coast I live on. I want to go with the Thunder.
So moving really far west.
Far west. I went midway. I'm working my way all the way to the west coast.
The Pacific Ocean facing heights of Oklahoma City.
Yes.
I think, you know, kind of like Boston, I think we've seen the worry of for Oklahoma City, where they've had a couple games this week where they've just gotten, you know, annihilated on the boards, and they don't have enough size. And there are some matchups that would worry me. You know, obviously the Nuggets is the hugest one, but I think that, like, I think they're more talented than the Lakers, but I think that they certainly have a vulnerability against the Lakers, and just that the Lakers might come and just, like, you know, little brother them almost just by with their sheer size and ability to dominate the paint.
I want to know who their fifth guy is at the end of games.
Oh, that's Isaiah Joe.
Yeah. Hayward has low-key been terrible for them so far, if you guys haven't, or maybe high-key.
Oh, no, I've been watching, Seth. Yeah. You know I've been watching. Yeah. I didn't care for that trade, so you know I've been watching. No, but your question, though, Mike, in terms of who is that fifth guy, because it can't be Giddy. It's not Josh Giddy, that's for sure. And I actually don't think – I think that's the first playoff adjustment they make, if they're going to bench Giddy and start Isaiah Joe. They did it in the second half of the game against the Clippers a couple weeks ago, where they really did a great job and ran the Clippers out. That's their first adjustment. But I think that answer is actually Isaiah Joe for the most part, in crunch time when they need to go, you know, and find that guy. My concern, and I think this is something that really dawned on me at the Laker game. I was there live, and I just kind of said, man, I don't know what this team's plan B is on offense. Like, listen, this is their offense now, the way it's set up. And it's, by the way, really good. I'm not trying to crush it, but, you know, Shea ISO, Shea pick and roll with Chet pops. You know, they play five out. They want to have all the driving lanes, continue to drive, kick. They do all their stuff, and there's all that works. But on the games where Shea's got to deal with tough shots and he's not making some of them, and they're not knocking down threes at the highest percentage, I don't know what they go to next. I don't know what the variation is. And playoff basketball is all about having different versatility. It's about having plan B's and C's, and our plan B is better than your plan B. And I think that's the real situation, and the real concern that's kind of hanging beneath the surface in Oklahoma City is, I don't think they have it. I don't think they know what it is. And I think part of it is because they've been working so hard to put in plan A, they haven't figured out we need a plan B yet.
No one's been able to stay in front of Shea all year. That doesn't mean that over a course of a 7-game series, a team won't figure out how to, whether it's an individual defender or sort of a scheme, to take that away. And I think that sort of gets to what you're talking about, right? If they don't have that sort of initial advantage creation, where, again, he's been the best in the league at that this year, you know, and it made him and Jokic, and obviously in a very different way. And
you don't think Jokic is lightning fast?
Yeah, but no, but Jokic's sort of advantage creation is sort of less schemable, because he can always just rely back on, I'm just going to back you into the basket, and unless someone, like, moves somewhere, I'm just going to, you know, put you in the basket with the ball. Like, the Thunder don't have that, and maybe the closest they do is, like, in most matchups, Jalen Williams has a physical advantage, but he's just maybe not quite on that level that you want to rely on that.
He's not there yet. I think Jalen Williams will get there, but I don't think he's there yet. Mike, am I crazy?
I think you guys are, you're all correct. I mean, I think Jalen Williams is the backup, right? Like, he's the plan B in that situation. He's also unproven. He's obviously not the dynamic force. I think that Shea is the beauty of Jalen Williams is kind of the wholeness of his game, not necessarily him, is just an offensive driver and playmaker. So it's going to be very curious. And, like, they obviously rely on Giddy for some of that, but I don't think he's playable late in games. And I don't know if you can go into a playoff series, especially even like a second round series, hoping that he carries a large burden for them offensively with all the other warts that he has.
All right. We got two teams left, and we're slowly making it to the West Coast, and we're going to go with the Denver Nuggets. They do look at times completely unstoppable. Like, they just look like they can just flip the switch and go and whatnot. Didn't work last night against Phoenix, although they were able to force overtime. Mike, you're Denver. What are you kind of worried about?
Honestly, mine is I was going to say mine is kind of like the inverse, which is, can any other team match their peak? Because we know what that peak is. We've seen it. We saw it last year in the spring. We've seen it at times this year. It's like, it's sure there are, I think, things on the margins about the Nuggets, but I just like, can anyone be as good as Denver can potentially be?
Yeah, for me, it's a question of like, can Peyton Watson and Christian Brown be the guys off the bench and replace what Bruce Brown brought to them last year? And I don't know, also not 100% sure they need that. Like, this is one of those teams. I'm not sure if there is something that I'm really like, if that's what it's them in Boston, it's nitpicking. Like, we can just be honest about it. It's really just nitpicking and going like, you know, and I think those are where I'm at with that.
I would put them on even a different tier than Boston, because Boston there is, again, it's the 90-10 rule with the Celtics, and the Nuggets only have to beat you four times to win a playoff series. The Celtics kind of put themselves in situations where they have to win five games to actually get four because of their propensity to kick games that they have already kind of quote unquote won away. And so that's, you know, the worry for Denver is they're not super deep. But how many teams can survive injuries? But like, you know, if Malik Beasley got hurt for the Bucks, that's, I think, less of a problem for them than it would be than if Kentavious Caldwell-Pope got hurt for the Nuggets. Just because I think the drop off is from any of those spots. So they're a little bit fragile in that way, in that if they have their starting five healthy, they're the best team, and you know, they should be favored in any and every series. But if any of those guys go away, it gets pretty sketchy pretty fast.
It's true. And let's go to the other team. The last team finally made it to the West Coast. I'm finally looking out at the Pacific Ocean, and I'm talking about the Los Angeles Clippers. What are we? I mean, there's a lot I'm afraid of with the Clippers. What are you guys worried about with the Clips?
So let me ask you, Mo. They've scuffled recently. What has that been about? Like, what in your observation? What is the? Is it just they're going through sort of a down stretch and some guys have been out and blah blah blah, or is there something like structural that's been revealed by this latest little stretch of struggle?
Part of it for me is more them just going through the motions. Look, they had an unbelievable Grammy trip and went completely nuts. And were, you know, I was running around going like, they might be the best team, might have the best roster 1 through 12. And maybe I even went a bit overboard with that, but it's hard to keep up that intensity for the rest of the season with that. But I also think, and I'm not, the Russell Westbrook injury matters a lot, I think, in that he brings a different kind of energy and juice to the team, tries to get them to play faster and push them in transition and get them a few more easy buckets and whatnot. And I think that is the thing that I would say when I'm watching them, like, I worry that they're too cool sometimes. And two, just like, we'll get it, you know, almost like they think they're a flip the switch team, and I don't think they are.
I'm just going to be a basic B about this and say, hey, will anyone be healthy in the playoffs? Like, I know it's very simple, but this has been their downfall in how many straight postseasons now? And I the Clippers to me are like one of those teams is like, will they actually be able to have their best players on the court? And James Harden obviously will play, but then will he show up? So that's all I got. Like, I don't know.
Well, Harden doesn't have to be Harden in that way, right? Like, he doesn't have to carry a massive load. I mean, end of games, it's going to Kawhi, right? And if it's not Kawhi, it needs to be PG. So I think, like, Harden kind of gets to live in a little bit of a different, easier ecosystem where I think we'll see more playoff success from him.
I guess the other worry I'd have for them is sort of every year in the playoffs, it seems like Zubats like sort of starts to become like the you know, the Polaroid of Marty McFly's family, where he's like he's there in the picture, and then suddenly he's becoming more and more like fading away almost. And I don't even know if it's his fault as a player per se, but it just seems like he gets deprioritized, and then they become very sort of very mid-sized very quickly. And just wondering again, you wonder specifically about Denver, you wonder about the Lakers, you'd wonder about the Bucks in a possible finals matchup, is if he is like less a part of your team, what happens?
Yeah, it's definitely that. And you do have some concerns about size with them as well. I think that's a team that also does struggle a little bit with size with that. And then if you take Zubac off the floor, it's like, okay, now it's Tice and Plumlee, like, yikes kind of situation. And Tice has been good for them, but you do tend to get a little bit worried with some of that stuff. I think that's a good place to end it. Do you guys have anything you'd like to add? Mike, you want to send us off with anything?
I'm just happy to be invited. I'm just, you know, I listen to you guys. Now, obviously not smart enough to hang all the time. I'm honored to be considered a nerd just once.
Oh, you've been considered a nerd for much longer than that, Mike. Don't you worry about that. Seth, anything you got coming that we need to plug?
No, it's Dave will be back next week. We'll tell him how much we didn't miss him, and we'll keep it moving. And we're kind of heading to we're heading to the weird part of the season where it's a lot of reactionizing over stuff that maybe doesn't matter as much as we think it does, just because of the proximity of the playoffs. So it's this next month is sort of like, let's get through it and then get to the playoffs, and then I'm really excited for the playoffs this year.
Playoffs are going to be really interesting.
I call it the whose line is it anyway part of the NBA season, where the games happen, but the points don't matter. Like, you don't really take anything from it.
There we go. Appreciate that one there, Mike. That was actually a pretty good one. All right. Well, that's it for us here at Nerder She Wrote. Remember, folks, help us help you. Fill out the survey at theathletic.com/survey24. And hey, have a chance to win $100 Amazon vouchers. Thank you so much for listening.